ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Richard Larimer, the founder and CEO of RLM Public Relations. He's the author of numerous best-selling books, including Punk Marketing and Full Frontal PR. He's also been published in the New York Times, Washington Post, Rolling Stone, People, Huffington Post, and USA Today. Richard is a frequent guest on CNN, CNBC, Fox News, and NPR, and was also the host of the TV show Taking Care of Business on TLC. Hi, Richard. It's great to speak with you.
It's great to speak with you.
I've been really eager to speak with an experienced PR expert for quite a while. I'm interested to know how PR is adapting in today's media and entertainment landscapes, especially which PR tactics are thriving in this new age and which are dying out. And if you could maybe start with what's the PR mentality here in 2018?
Well, the funny thing is PR as a phrase is completely kind of old and antiquated in the sense that it doesn't really mean anything anymore. I mean, we are relating to the public, so public relations does count. I would say that the smart agencies, and I guess I would have to count my own as one of them, are doing a ton more than just what was known as, you know, kind of media relations. And it's because we're being trusted so much more by our clients and incoming clients, particularly new clients, to do so much more on the social bent and also to get them partnerships and to get them speak engagements and to work with analysts and to do crisis comms. So the old days, and we were victims of that, you know, where we did like 90% media, they're kind of gone because there's so much more, you know, I've been in this business now for almost 30 years. There's so much more based on who we know and what we know, that companies are just saying, you know, do it all, do our microsites, just come in and help us be successful. And that, so the modern PR agency is nothing like the PR agency of 5 years ago.
So even in 5 years, you've seen that type of shift.
Oh yeah, totally, totally. 5 years ago, we'd been having this conversation, I'd be like, sure, you know, bloggers and blah, blah, blah. You know, we were still, you know, unfortunately for us, we were still in that phase of trying to, you know, get as much exposure for our clients as possible. But that, no, not today. It's so much more. It has to be so much more.
Right. One of the things in my day job, I work with entertainment brands to help them market and promote their content. And one of the things that's really been a seismic shift in that industry is the way people discover content. And it really is all about social networks. And so it's interesting that you mentioned those social platforms and partnerships. And so I'm interested in terms of what your thoughts are about the PR utility of Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Snapchat. I mean, certainly each platform has a slightly different purpose. And how, when you're looking at these platforms, do you think about them? Let's start with Twitter. What's the utility of Twitter? Or is it just a danger zone?
Well, yeah, it's funny. You know, I mean, since November 9th, 2016, I think that Twitter has changed a lot. It used to be a lot more fun and it used to be a really great place to play. And now it's just like, you know, it seems like it's being used for all these nefarious purposes. So I'm not as big, I used to be an enormous fan of Twitter. I'm not anymore. You know what I'm finding fascinating is the new platforms that are adjacent to new categories. Like, for instance, like anybody involved in the blockchain uses Telegram now for all of their information. And anybody involved in anything having to do with media, you know, is all about Reddit. And anybody in a serious new type of startup business is all about LinkedIn. So, you know, it's like, I think it's less about everything and more about the finite channels that people are using for their category or industry.
Oh, interesting. So what about, you know, is YouTube anything in terms of PR, Facebook, Instagram?
Well, Instagram, you know, it's interesting. I mean, if you're basing, if the business is geared to a millennial demographic, or Gen Z demographic, then Instagram is a must visit. I mean, you have to pay attention. Facebook, I think Facebook has sort of seen its better days. We do use Facebook for some commercial purposes when it comes to consumer brand, like really deep retail-oriented consumer brands. YouTube, yes. I mean, YouTube and Vimeo are great. I mean, they're great for channels. I mean, we do a lot of video here. The funny thing about video, though, even though it's based in YouTube, and YouTube is very helpful to us, and so is Vimeo, I mean, what we're finding is that most of the media have their own platforms for video now and their own need for video and are not so much linking to things, but are actually, you know, taking the videos that we create and using them for, you know, the repurposing of their, for their own content, which, you know, I refer to in my, I always call it embedded PR.
So your firm, one of the things that really differentiates what you do is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you really identify trends and help your clients loop in and get into those trends. How do you go about spotting a trend? And is there a method to it? And does that change over time? Or how do you trend spot?
You know, that may be the one thing that we do that has never changed. And we've been doing, I realized many, 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 many years ago that one of the great things about this business is that if you're really informed about what's happening, what's coming down the turnpike, what's burgeoning, what's new, what's almost new, if you really pay attention and you really study, then again, stay informed as possible, what you find out is there are these brand new trends that nobody sort of picked up on, but are happening for because they're part of the news cycle or because they're about to be part of the news cycle or because somebody is making it so. And what we tend to do is we tend to get one of our client spokespeople to become the spokesperson for that trend. In other words, we train them to within an inch of their lives to talk about the trend that we want to get out there the most. And then when that trend gets looked up upon by media or influencers, whoever they may be, then our client is usually the one called for the quote. So it actually does work.
Can you give an example just because, you know, there are so many hypotheticals here. So let's take a real example of a trend you spotted in advance and who you trained up to be that trend spokesperson, how it played out. Could you take us through that?
Yeah, of course. One of the areas that we work with is in ed tech, which is, you know, the education technology industry. And we launched a very small and not very well-known brand 7 or 8 years ago called Tutor Vista. And they were an all-you-can-eat tutelage company for mostly high school students. And they were in a really crowded marketplace, even though they were pretty inexpensive and they had a great model and it was very interesting. But I kept saying to them, you know, in order to really do this up, we're going to have to find something that you can sink your teeth into. And at the time, it was the last vestiges of the No Child Left Behind Act, which was a disaster. And what we did was we studied that. And what we discovered in studying that was that the government had promised to give tutors, free tutors, to all of the people in the most rural parts of the country that needed it the most because of No Child Left Behind. In other words, that they didn't test well. Anyway, they never did that. So we announced we were going to take the 10 most needy places in the country and offer them free tutoring. And what that did was it got Tutor Vista in every single media outlet that you could name, from Good Morning America to Today Show to Reuters to The Economist to, you know, Time Magazine to you name it, because people were shocked that A, no one had done anything about this, and B, that we solved the problem.
Well, question for you. So they've made the big push. How do they measure the ROI on that venture? You know,
you must imagine. Yeah. I mean, that's the question of the day. How? Because they became a leader. After the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times wrote about them and how great they were, they became the leader and actually ended up being sold to Pearson for hundreds of millions of dollars. So, I mean, the ROI, sometimes we have to do some serious metric searching and a lot of analysis. We didn't have to do that for this.
right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I'm jumping ahead. I have this sort of as long as my arm list of questions, and I'm jumping ahead. And
sure, of course.
I guess one of the things I'm curious about, we are in an age of data, data, data. And what are the I know, right? What are the KPIs that clients expect, and are they reasonable?
Well, it depends what industry. Like, for instance, we have some retail clients, and we have some, fintech clients, financial technology clients. So for the retail clients, it's pretty obvious. I mean, Google Analytics and special URLs and everything, we can track that stuff easily. For the other ones, these are businesses that depend upon their business development methodology, the methods of how they collect new leads. And so for us, it's really a matter of how are they getting those leads? In other words, is it through the partnerships that we set up? Is it through the media? Is it through the content that we put out there? Is it through the blog post that we write? Is it through? So we analyze basically because we want to do good PR, not just for our clients, but also for ourselves, because we want to be seen as leaders. We analyze every aspect of what we do, and we show the client monthly or sometimes bimonthly, depending on their mood, exactly how things are leading to success for them. And what we do for our clients, which I don't think a lot of PR firms do these days, is we actually sit down with them on a regular basis and talk about actual goals and how to reach and how we can help reach them. So in other words, it's not nebulous. It's not something that sits in the sky. There are real metrics. There's a real calculation to what we do. And, again, I just want to tell you that 5 years ago, a lot of the way that we measured things was not that possible.
Right. Right, of course. I want to go back just again to trend spotting. And this is something that is sort of has been constant. But help me a little bit in terms of what are you doing to be able to spot those trends and to know them ahead of time? Or is that the secret sauce you're not going to remember?
No, it's not the secret sauce. I've had a practice. Well, I will tell you that social media has made it a lot easier to spot trends. I mean, now no one has an excuse. In the old days, in the days before social media, I used to tell people, go to Barnes & Noble, you remember them, and take 10 magazines from 10 different fields and read every single one of them, and you will notice certain things that are popping out from all of them. And that always worked. Now, things are different. Now we don't have those 10 magazines because, everybody writes every day about everything. So, but there is this other practice, which I refer to as, it's a proprietary thing, but I call it magnetism, which is this idea that people get attracted to you as an individual because of your specialty and because you're sharing the information that you find really exciting and interesting. And because you're sharing the information and links and things like that, and opinions and theories and what have you, people will then share their stuff with you, which is it's magnetic. It actually, it's a lot of people working together to inform one another. It's almost like one-upping the other person, but it's a great thing. And social media has made it really easy to spot trends because, again, if people are attracted to you for your information, they'll share their information with you too. And that's how people pick up on things that are happening in the world today.
Interesting. Now, a lot of times people talk about social media that sort of channels you into information bubbles, that you're missing information, but you don't think that. You feel that it actually...
Only selfish people get into the bubble. You know what I mean? Like if you don't share, you won't be shared with. It's like what your parents told you in kindergarten. It's the same exact thing today.
Don't be greedy with your knowledge.
And I'm very serious about this whole magnet thing. Don't be greedy with your knowledge. The more you give, the more you get. And it is. I have proven this with the most stubborn people in the world who've said, that's not true. And I've said, well, try it. Go out there and share the things that you're most knowledgeable about and see if people respond to it. And every single one of them has called me back and said, never mind.
Well, I think it also helps if you're actually genuinely curious about things, though, that it actually sparks your brain.
Of course. I mean, you have to be, yes. I mean, listen.
You can't phone it in.
Well, here's the thing. The other thing is you can't personalize your incoming. You know what I mean? That is a huge error that people make. I only want to know about pop music. I only want to know about advertising. You can't do that. You've got to look at every aspect of what's happening out there.
Yes, I am the choir. Preach. Yes,
Seriously, I mean, you've got it. You can't, this personal, back in the 2000s when people were talking about personalized engines, it drove me crazy. I'd be like, you know, I don't want, you know, anything from myplayboy.com. You know, I mean, I don't want, you know what I mean? I want a little bit of everything. It's a smorgasbord. I mean, we are so lucky. I mean, do you remember? I mean, maybe you don't even remember this, but there was a time when you had to get all your information from the library.
I do remember that. I tell my children about that.
Well, there you go. See, I mean, you know, I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day about microfiche.
Oh my God. Right. And those machines, and they'd always get mucky. Yeah. Oh.
Yes. You had to search for things. I mean, I wrote a book in 19, I can't tell you what year because it'll age me, but I wrote a book a long time ago, and I went to the library and used all this microfiche for all the information. And listen, it was fun, but it was also a giant pain in the butt.
Well, except, you know, I have to say that sometimes the internet feels very wide, but very thin. Whereas when I go to the New York Public Library, it feels very deep. And maybe...
I love libraries and I love bookstores and I love being around magazines. I have like a million magazines around my apartment and people laugh all the time. It's a fire hazard. I mean, you know, I still believe in print, even though... I just heard today that Red Book announced that they were no longer going to do a print edition, which I think means pretty much the end of print as we know it.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that. Just last night, my boys were saying to me, you know, Mom, books are, because I was asking them about a particular magazine and how aware they were of the brand, if it functioned for them. And they looked at me like I had grown another head. And they said, no, Mom, people aren't reading anymore that way. We'll read online, but we don't want to read. And for me, I like the tactileness. I like the personalness. I like books. Like you, I like
newspapers too, which is a problem because I even said to somebody yesterday about an A1 story and they didn't know what I was talking about. And I was like, oh my God, this is how far we've gone. They were like, what's an A1 story? Is that like steak sauce? And I was like, oh no, this is bad. This is terrible. So
what's better than the Sunday paper and coffee, right? Spread out all over the...
Oh my God. I still get the Times delivered on Sunday and it's really expensive.
I know, me too. But how can you let it go? Okay. I don't want to get too far off point. One of the things is... I had a question about, you know, obviously part of what you as a PR firm is working with is what is the differentiator? And how involved do you become to help the company determine the what? Do you help lead them to that what?
Yeah. That's the first order of business with every client. No one, people come to us all the time and they're like, we have no idea.
Are there things that people should be doing to help themselves come to you a little better armed so that they, I mean, you know, a lot of people are, you know, technology is so seductive. Is technology a differentiator or is it usually something else? I mean, what is it that typically differentiates?
It's not the technology. It can't be the technology because that's just too ubiquitous. I'll tell you what the differentiator is. It's the thing that your grandmother or somebody else's grandmother would understand. It's that factor that people go, holy crap, I did not know that existed. And, you know, let me tell you a funny story. It'll take 2 seconds. So, you know, Jeopardy, right? The TV show Jeopardy?
Yes.
So there's a woman that works there 40 hours a week, full time. And her entire job is to take the contestants, each one individually, into a room and find out what makes them special. So, because they don't know. They don't know what their differentiator is. So that's how Alex Trebek talks to these people. It's not all done accidentally. It's all done on purpose. And I always try to explain to my incoming clients that we need to act like that woman who works for Jeopardy. We need to find out, really drill down, we can't talk about everything because people don't care. We have to talk about maybe two things max, but it's that scintilla of an idea that no one else is doing, that you're doing. And it sometimes takes a lot of work because, you know, companies have more than one decision maker and they don't always agree on what that is. And it becomes a knockout, drag out fight. And I'm okay with that.
Right. So now shifting gear, well, how is it different when you're working with a business that sells primarily to businesses versus a business that sells primarily to consumers? Or is it mostly you're always selling to
it's not that different anymore. And I'll tell you why, because everybody's a consumer now. Mm-hmm. So selling to businesses, you're not selling to things, you're selling to people. So yes, your message is different, but the way to go about it, I mean, I remember about 3 or 4 years ago, there was this hilarious story in the New York Times business section where Starbucks had announced to their shareholders that the reason why their stock had was down was because their coffee wasn't as good as it used to be, and how they were going to make their coffee better. And I remember thinking, so Starbucks thinks that only investors are reading the New York Times. So everybody else on earth is saying, what the hell was wrong with the coffee to begin with? I hate you. And it was on that day that I said to anybody who would listen, hey, we're all consumers, cut it out. There's no longer like a trade magazine that you go to. It's all out there, man. It's one big happy family. So the messages are going to be different for businesses than they are for people, because, you know, we're going to be much more geared towards selling you something that you need for your business, but you're still selling to people, and you're always going to be, until the robots take over, we're going to be selling to people.
Right. Well, okay. So what about celebrities? Because obviously celebrities, PR people. And I had read an article that said that the celebrity profile is a dying thing, because now celebrities have their own direct relationship with fans. And do you believe that?
Well, that's not true at all. That's not true, because most people know that the celebrities who tweet and do that stuff on Instagram, that's being done by, most of the time it's being done by somebody else, like a company. So, you know, like Jane Fonda may respond to something that you said to her, but she's not doing it. She's got a company in Atlanta that's doing it for her. You know, and the fact of the matter is, you know, I always say that people who are celebrated, you know, celebrity types, have to be careful, because they are now dealing with the generation that invented hype. So, and I mean all of us, I mean generations, I should say. It's the celebrity profile, which is video, audio, infographics, text, funny anecdotes, all that stuff, that's still being done by media. And that's still being done by third parties. And it's still important. And, you know, I think that people who discount, you know, look, bottom line to all of this is that 80% of all the information comes from the so-called mainstream media. I don't care if the blog picked it up or if, you know, some social media big mouth picked it up. They had to get it from some source, right? So, and the source is 80% of it proven is by mainstream media.
So I guess, is People Magazine still going to have its celebrity profiles then? You say yes, but yes, they will.
Okay. Absolutely. There's, as long as there are still people who care about celebrities, because the thing is celebrity social media used to be an interesting thing until, again, most people figured out that it was totally fake.
Oh, so it's like reality TV, sort of faux.
It's like reality TV. It's all scripted. Nothing is real. You know, it's all like people being told what to say or what to do or how to act. I mean, it's, you know, it was really funny last month when Murphy Brown got rebooted. People were complaining because they said it was too scripted. And I remember thinking, oh my God, they're so used to, like, you know, this fake reality stuff that doesn't seem scripted, that they were like complaining that there's a show that's scripted. And because it was scripted, I mean, somebody wrote it, but it was much more pointed, you know, as a script than, say, like any other modern TV show would be, which seems like they're making it up as they go along, which is not, as you know, is not true.
Right. Well, a question for you then. So Taylor Swift made big news when she wandered into the political forum after Knot. Was that something then that she would have talked to her PR team, and they would have weighed the pros and cons, and then her team would have gone out and sort of crafted this message? Is that how that would work? That wasn't just sort of...
Probably. I mean, I think Taylor Swift, you know, is one of those celebrities that, like, people, you know, groups work with and say, you know, let's pretend you had an affair with John Mayer, and then you can say this song is about that affair. You know what I mean?
I see.
It's that kind of behavior.
Right.
So, and that happens every day. I mean, there are so many fake relationships in Hollywood that it isn't even funny.
You're ruining all of my beliefs now. Oh my goodness.
Sorry. But it's funny. It's like, you know, this has been happening since the early 1900s. I mean, it's nothing new.
Right.
You know, people are famous for a reason, and there's a whole industry of people keeping them famous.
Sure.
And, you know, and that includes the media.
Right. So here's a question for you. If a client is, you know, currently looking at PR firms and marketing firms mm-hmm. and advertising firms, it feels like there's a certain amount of blur and overlap. How should clients evaluate PR firms? When is it the PR firm they go to build out all these things? And when is it their agency? How do they think about these things?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a complicated question because it depends on the needs. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. I mean, I have a great deal of respect for the advertising business, but I also know that it's kind of run its course in the sense that everybody who looks at an ad these days thinks to themselves, oh, look, that's an ad.
Right, right. That isn't a family. Those people aren't married. Yeah, right. That's not
their exactly.
Kid.
It's like the Hyundai commercial. I don't know if you've seen this. It's the Hyundai commercial where they're using the exact same four people in a family for every commercial, which I think is actually quite smart. But after a while, you get sick of seeing them.
Right,
you know, it's
right.
like, okay, shut up and move on. But, you know, so ads are difficult. But, you know, the thing about PR morphing into something different, I mean, the fact that companies like ours are doing, and there are other companies doing this, that are doing like, you know, site development, that are doing, you know, basically anything that a company needs. You know, we do ad buys. We're not doing the creative for the advertising because we're not, but we do ad buys. We do the paid sponsored posts and all that good stuff. But the fact of the matter is, I still believe, and I believe this since I can remember, that third party validation is important to companies and crucial, really important to companies who want people to believe that they are the real deal.
Right. So that actually is that third party validation, I think, is so important, especially now when there's so much noise and so much content. I personally think that it's sort of, you know, if we're seeing agencies wane, we're seeing the rise in PR and the efficacy of PR. Would you agree or do you not feel that?
I'm amazed. Since the recession is over, I'm amazed at the way that PR has become like one of the most important, you know, quote unquote, seats at the
right.
table. And I think it's because people realize that they need messaging, which is what we do, you know, to start with. They need a mission. They need a timeline and they need to be out there. I mean, I know it sounds like a cliche to say it, but they need to be out there. They need to be exposed for the good stuff that they're doing. They need to be, you know, they need to talk about things that are important to the world. They need to be part of the news cycle. They need to, you know, have a crisis comm plan in case something silly happens to them or bad. They need to talk to analysts. They need to be out there on speaking engagements. They need to be talking to groups. They need to have social media presence that's actually real, mm-hmm. you know, that they can actually, you know, we can help them. We can push them off the ground, but that their people will actually take charge of, because I think that's important, because mm-hmm. that's what makes it genuine. And they also need, you know, much more. You know, and yes, there are all these influencers out there, and I believe in them, and they're terrific. But I believe that most companies know that the most influential people are people that share content. And the content has to emanate from somewhere, and normally it emanates from people like us.
That's right. So here, it's actually interesting you should mention the influencers, because today there are a lot of influencers who are not traditional journalists. And do you think
right.
that are journalists still the primary target, the gold standard for third-party validation?
Well, the funny thing is a lot of journalists have sort of stepped away from the quote-unquote media, started their own blogs or started their own, you know, sort of ways to get content out. But the good news for people like me is that those people that are influential because they have a following.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of citizen bloggers are people that, and we love these people, are just extraordinarily passionate about a topic, but they're not journalists. They just collect information and they have opinions and they have ideas. And the funny thing is, those are the people that journalists get most of their ideas from.
Right, right. That's interesting.
I don't know if journalists are the gold standard or they're just the standard.
Right, right. Well, how do companies or individuals tell if a PR firm is a good fit? Is it a gut thing or is it, you know, are there things that, what are the questions or things that people should be, you know, asking?
Well, first of all, they should look at their case studies and their track record, and they should see if it matches up. if their style matches up with the way they want to go out there. Because a lot of what we do follows the route of what we call mutual deliverables. Like, we demand our clients give us stuff. And a lot of companies don't like that. They don't want to be involved in the process. So in other words, it is a style thing. Like, you know, with us, I think our clients really like us because we're very aggressive and we're very creative, and that's kind of cool. But there are other companies that are much more buttoned up than we are, who write fancy reports. And there are a lot of CYA people out there that need to have that in their lives. So I think it's a style thing. It's like, look at the case studies, look at the way that they've handled their company, look at their track record. I get a lot of incoming because people see some of the amazing clients that we've had, and they say, oh, wow, I know that company. I wonder who does their PR, because they're freaking everywhere. And, you know, and they call us and they say, oh my God, we're in a similar business, or we're starting at a similar time, or we're, you know, whatever. I can't tell you why they do it. But, you know, it's not just SEO, it's actual results that people are looking at.
Right. What would you say is your greatest PR success? I mean, you have had this 30-year career. What do you point to and say, that was the one? That's the thing that if I have to tell one person, one story, that's the story.
Well, we're kind of living it right now. We represent Wondery, which is the leading podcast company in the world right now. Mm-hmm. They did Dirty John last year, and Dr. Death this year. And they did, you know, Inside Jaws. And anyway, they've done a million podcasts that have all been number one. And we came to them when they were basically nothing. And we've turned them into one of the biggest media success stories of the last couple of years. You know, and we've done everything we can for them in terms of our own auspices, things that we like to do for our clients. And it's, you know, Dr. Death is, you know, the number one podcast for the last 5 weeks. And I just started talking to the people at the Peabody Awards about it. I mean, that's exciting.
Wow.
You know what I mean? That's, you know, because it's an incredible story, not just about a terrible doctor, but also about institutional failure.
Right.
That happened in many places. And so it's a journalistic endeavor. So, like, I was a journalist before I was in PR. Journalism is important to me. So when Wondery called me a couple of years ago, I said, oh, this could be fun. And in the last 2 years, they've become a leader in a new type of media, or newish type of media, that everybody is very aware of and is watching very carefully. And I have to say, I'm blown away by, you know, our team has been very successful. You know, we have they've given us a lot of the right stuff to work with, but we've also helped them mold the company in a certain way. I like to think that we had a lot to do with that too. And Dirty John was, you know, the biggest success story of last year. And now it's a TV show and blah, blah, actually two TV shows. You know, so I love media companies. I'm a big media junkie. So we work with a ton of media companies. They're not our specialty, but there's something. So I don't know. I think Wondery may be, you know, one of the great RLM success stories.
Fantastic. That sounds great. What would you say what is up next for you? What's on the horizon?
Well, I'm trying to, in my spare time, I like to write books.
I didn't even get to these books. So you've written three
books.
No,
it's fine. But I haven't written a book since 2010. So it's a long time, man.
Slacker.
So I'm trying to write a book about I'm not going to write a texty type book. I'm going to write a fun book about the history of fame.
The history of, ooh. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did a book. I did Punk Marketing last decade, which was all about like how people basically need to rethink their marketing from day one. I did Full Frontal PR, which was the kind of, now is a textbook, but then was kind of the fun book about how to learn about PR. I did two books on trend spotting. I did all these books about New York. I mean, I've enjoyed myself with this book, but now I want to do something that's much more, you know, let's deeper,
right,
if you will.
Right. Wow. Well, that sounds great. I can't wait to read that when it comes out. So you've got to keep me looped in.
Well, I can't wait to write it.
So how can people learn more about you and your firm?
Well, obviously they can go to our brand new website, which we just put up 3 weeks ago, which is the first fully adapted, like, look at who we've become since we've changed. Because as I said to you earlier, we changed a lot. So rlmpr.com is the new site. I'm very proud of it. We worked on it for a very long time. And it's a fun site. It has a glossary of terms that we find very funny. I hope everybody does too. We also have a timeline, because we're a 27-year-old company. So we did a timeline. We talk about all the things that we've done all the little successes we've had. We talk about our bar mitzvah. We talk about our firm had a bar mitzvah. And we talk about all these things that we did over through the years and crazy things that have happened to us. And of course, to our clients. And we do case studies and we do, you know, descriptions and we have like bios. But anyway, that's a good way to start, I think. People can always just contact me because I love being contacted.
Well, fantastic. Well, thank you so much. Believe it or not, we have run through all of our time. We could talk for hours.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. So fast, right? It has been an absolute pleasure.
We're just slipped by. I had so much fun.
Fantastic. We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who helped bring the program to life. First, my friend, Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.